Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Mission: Impossible - Rogue Nation.
Aaron, I need you to open the door. No, the other door.
Just I'm on it.
The front door.
I'm on it.
I'm outside.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Ohayou gozaimasu!
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 202.
We keep on hitting these palindromes.
We're back to palindrome.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Since we got there, but we've done it. Now that we're past 200, we have so many more fun number combinations, I imagine, happening in our upcoming episodes, right, Abe?
I'm pretty sure that's going to be the case.
Yes. Well, this week, speaking of elaborate number combinations, we have a most elaborate combination of various punctuation marks to describe this next film that we're going to talk about. It is Mission: Impossible - Rogue Nation, the fifth entry in the Mission: Impossible franchise. And joining Abe and I to discuss Mission: Impossible - Rogue Nation, we have from Fast Film Reviews, he's somehow holding his breath while doing this podcast, it's Mark Hoban.
Hi everyone.
And from whysoblue.com, he's nothing but risky business, it's Jordan Grout.
Oh, hello.
How are you both doing today?
Very well.
Great.
Good.
How are you?
Great.
Great.
I feel amazing. How do you feel?
Feeling good. Feeling great. How about you?
Yeah. See? We're great. We're doing great. Why do you feel great, Abe? What have you been doing?
Just been eating this
cheese.
We
talk about the podcast.
Been eating this cheese and it's delicious.
String cheese?
Well, now I'm on cheddar cheese.
Jesus, like, is it still stringed?
No, it's not. It's just rectangular. Or I guess not rectangular. It'd be like 3D, you know. It's not a block, no. Individually wrapped cheddar cheese.
Not the movie stuff. It's what kind of cheese Abe's eating. It's those grounded details that really bring out our personalities.
It really helps to ground myself into everyday life. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay, good. Let's move on. This is ridiculous. No one likes this at all. I don't know what we're talking about. But what we should be talking about is our stuff that we do here.
We
have some cool things. We are at 202, which means that we're past our 200th episode. Again, if you have not listened to our 200th episode yet, where we talk not only about Trainwreck and Ant-Man, but we also go over the oral history of our podcast, be sure to check that one out, because it was a lot of fun to put together. We also recently did a commentary track for Mission Impossible 2. Thank you, Jordan. This also seems like the perfect opportunity to listen to a commentary track for Mission Impossible 2, where we talk very little about the actual movie and more about star Tom Cruise and the kind of celebrity bubble that's around him. A lot of fun on that one.
Hmm. Mission Impossible 2, that's my favorite Vidal Sassoon commercial ever. it's also the longest one.
Woo style. With that in mind, if you like this podcast, you can go to iTunes and you can leave us a review and or rating. And we recently got a new review that I'm going to read right now. This one is from username FUC7U, which is a fun one to put together. But regardless, he gave us gave us five stars and says, just as my subject implies, listening to Aaron, it says hanging out with the gang. Just as my subject implies, listening to Aaron and Abe is akin to being the guy who sits in awe while listening to his or her friends pour over film insight trivia and feed it to you in an organic, unpretentious manner. Keep it up, guys.
That's what we look for. I mean,
I'm glad to be called unpretentious. That's a nice compliment.
I mean, Aaron's pretty unpretentious. Maybe. No.
that's a new one. But could be called unpretentious. Mark, I know you hate the word pretentious in general.
Well, it's funny. Unpretentious could almost be a put down, but I guess it's.
I choose not to look at it that way.
No, I'm sure it's meant as a compliment.
I think it is. I think it's because we're not snobby.
I think it is.
It's because there's me, who like is a film buff and likes to talk about things but makes it relatable. And then there's Abe.
Down to earth.
He talks about cheese.
That's what you guys are, down to earth. That's...
Talking about cheese, drinking carrot juice.
Yeah,
you
like you're the Wallace of this group.
What? I'm going to get killed? My body's going to be put in a base?
You love the cheese and you know.
Oh, Wallace. Okay.
Yeah, Wallace.
I'm thinking like the wire Wallace.
Not like me, Jordan. No, not
yeah,
you.
I'm like, what? What? I thought we were friends. And then you're like, you shoot me and then I'm just like, ah.
Anyway, wire tangents aside, you can go to iTunes, leave us a review and a rating. It helps that our show helps other people find our show when you leave a review. When you leave especially a rating, it bumps us up in like the system. And it's like, hey, this is a show that people are still listening to somehow. And we want to make sure that we're aware of that. So
well, in my 5-star review that I just wrote, I said you were very pretentious. So
it's good to have opinions all around.
But still, it's 5 stars. So it's still gonna bother.
Five stars thing is what.
Yeah, gonna do it.
You can say whatever you want. I don't want people to just write like random song lyrics and just leave a 5-star review. That'd just be entertaining to me because I don't sing song lyrics. We'd have each guest do that, obviously.
Don't want to close my eyes. Don't want to fall asleep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, what else? Contest. I announced that there would be a contest around the 200th episode. I have not formulated said contest yet, but I still have said amazing prize. So at some point, there will be a contest. So if you keep listening to this podcast, you might have a chance to win something incredibly cool.
What's the prize?
Pretty cool. It actually relates to something we just talked about. But
yeah, it does. I'm kind of jealous of the prize.
You should.
Is it the CD of your commentary track for Mission Impossible 2?
Exactly. We're gonna burn it. Tracks. Yeah. We're gonna use a DVD-R like back in 2003, burn it on a disc.
And it's all the uhs and uhs edited out and put into one long track. set to a beat. Yeah. No, it's something really.
It's a signed autographed photo by YouTube.
Yeah, of Scott Mendelsohn. So it's a pretty cool
Scott Mendelsohn's headshot for his IMDb page.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. Moving on from here. Let's get on to Know Everybody. We each week we ask each other a few questions, try to set the tone for the podcast. I better get to
know everybody.
We're doing this, guys.
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
You didn't pause.
I've learned to not pause. I've learned to just go with it. Just like that everyone's favorite Adam Sandler movie. Just go with it.
Yeah.
I can insert a cricket sound later.
I'm going to guess that it's also starring Drew Barrymore.
No, that was the Jennifer Aniston one. Blended was the terrible Adam Sandler.
Jennifer Aniston one.
Just go with it.
Just go with it.
You don't have to remember.
Yeah, I don't remember that movie. I really do not.
It was from like 2010, maybe?
What?
11?
Or 11.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
like
I'll
he
just
plays
go
a dentist because that's what. Why are we talking about this?
No, don't. Yeah, let's go into.
Make sense? She pretends to be his wife, and
why are we still going with this?
I don't know. I just feel like I wanted to clear it up for listeners. They're like, "What's just going with
it?" God, I barely remember this.
Nicole Kidman was in it.
Yeah, that's a thing that happened.
Really?
I'll insert more cricket sounds.
Oh
I swear.
God.
Sorry,
cricket sounds. Anyway, Dave Matthews is in it. Well, I'm seeing it now.
Yeah. What year is it? Since you're on it,
2011.
Okay. All
right. Jesus, I don't even remember.
Anyway, we're on Know Everybody, and I'm gonna start this one off.
Yes, please.
Would you guys rather hang off of a plane, a train, or an automobile?
Plane.
Automobile.
I'll go with train.
Okay, I'm glad I got all
that. We got our bases covered.
That really helps. No reason why. Just that makes sense to me. Okay. That's all I got. If you guys want to expand on it, you can, but you can move on otherwise.
Now, is there a particular Tom Cruise stunt that you think is one of his
most daring stuff,
or most dangerous?
Well, there was that time he stood up to Jack Nicholson.
That is true. I mean, Jack Nicholson basically berated him in court.
We know who won that case, but Aaron Sorkin. This movie has some crazy stuff. I would say that because I wrote about this at RantHollywood.com. Mm-hmm. The holding your breath underwater thing, which he learned to do for like 6 minutes, is insane. That
6 minutes sounds like a long time.
It isn't.
I did see that article and I read it. It's like, that's a long time to hold your breath.
The world record's 20.
6 minutes is still pretty long for
I still don't understand the why he needs to, because they can cut and they can edit around it, so I'm not really sure.
Because
you want it to be real,
man. That's what the press wants us to believe, anyway.
That's what he can do. That's why.
Well, when you're a robot trying to be a human, you try to do everything you can.
So, anyway, regardless of how long he held his breath, which
I'm not
beyond the realm of believing at this point when it comes to Tom Cruise doing crazy things for our entertainment. But there's one shot that I love in Mission Impossible 3 where he's just running. Like, and there's a lot of running in Tom Cruise movies, but there's like a long shot of him running in like Shanghai, where like it's literally
Shanghai. Okay,
it's literally him running for like a mile. Like he's going like, and it's in the shot that's not cut. It's like Fassbender in Shame. It's just this long shot, but he's sprinting. Fassbender's like jogging, and he's doing a good job because he's Fassbender. But Tom Cruise is like sprinting for a mile in Shanghai, and I really like that shot a lot. That's the thing I think of when I think of like Tom Cruise. It's not even like a big stunt. It's just him running, but still, he's doing it.
It's a mile.
It's a long run. It's probably not a mile, but it's still like a long run.
He's doing 6 minute miles
for a camera to hold on him for that amount of time. It's pretty. It's intense.
Okay.
Cruise style. Cruise control. Cruise
control. It's a pretty clever way of putting in cruise control. All right.
I feel like I know everybody.
Do you guys have other thoughts on Tom Cruise stunts?
Well, I mean, he attended that costume party in Eyes Wide Shut. That was pretty scary.
Yeah. Count Chocula?
Count Chocula.
Yeah, they all Count Chocula masks. Jordan?
Jeez, I like all of them. I don't even know which one is my favorite.
There you go.
Well, we'll get to it, but I mean, there's like several in the current movie world.
In the current one, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
But he does a lot of things in all of his other movies.
All right, well, that's it. That's how you play.
Know everybody.
All right, let's move on now to Al Quickies.
Jim.
Each week and out now, we have one main movie that we can talk about during the week.
Jim.
There's some consonant replacements there, but for the most part, I crushed that one. It worked.
I'm going to say that it was okay. It was a gold medal number two today.
So silver medal?
No, it's like when they can't really award silver medals.
Okay.
They just want all the kids in the swimming class to get gold medals.
good call. Okay, well, for Out Now Quickies, Abe, what else have you seen this week?
I actually watched The Original Vacation. And original I also vacation. Watched yeah, I also watched The Fault in Our Stars finally.
So you saw The Old Vacation, which I assume you've seen before.
I hadn't seen it in full before.
Okay.
So I rewatched it because I wanted to see the new one because I wanted to know what they were going to reference, if anything.
Did you go and see the new one?
I did not see the new one. So I'm kind of just like behind by a day. But no, The Original Vacation, sure, it is what it is. And I laughed at some parts, and some parts are strange.
When you say it is what it is, does that mean you're not a big fan of The Original Vacation?
I like it more than some of the other vacations that came up, but
I think The Original Vacation is one of those things that if you saw it at the time, then you probably look back on it with nostalgia. But it's not the greatest movie. But I saw it when I was young, and I liked it.
Yeah, and I definitely don't remember it fondly because I never saw it in whole when I was younger. But I just like the part where Chevy Chase really breaks down and he starts cussing at his entire family. So like, we're gonna go to fucking Wally World here, kids.
Why does it sound like Wilford Brimley when you say Chevy Chase's voice?
He wants you to get your diabetes medication, that's why. But anyway, Fault in Our Stars, man, that's a kind of a bummer movie. So I remember that we talked about it like many, many months ago where Aaron was just like, hey, you should go watch Fault in Our Stars because I was talking about Paper Towns or whatever. And I still hadn't seen it at that point. But, yeah, man, cancer sucks.
I don't recall being all that forward about Fallen Arts. I mean, it's fine. Like, I don't
know. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that you had just recommended, you know, seeing it if I hadn't seen other John Green properties or just one other John Green property.
That's the one of two. All right. I'll go back to Vacation. Well, I'll go. I've seen a number of things. I did see. Jordan, did you see Vacation?
I did.
Well, what, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I laughed. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. So there's a scene where Christina Applegate is at her old sorority, and I think it's the funniest scene in the whole movie. And after that scene, I thought, well, Christina Applegate should have been the lead, because Ed Helms, his whole aw shucks shtick that he does, it just irritates me.
I think he's miscast, honestly.
Yeah,
and it's not that I need like another Chevy Chase. That's you don't need to replicate that. But I just think the kind of role that he's supposed to be, it just doesn't fit for Ed Helms.
Yeah, I just think it's so, it just gets old so fast. And Christina Applegate steals every scene that she's in.
I think she's good. She fits. Yeah, the wife. Yeah, I mean she works.
Yeah, and I wish that she would have been the lead of the film.
She's good. She was always good in the Anchorman movies too. She adds a lot.
She has a lot of comedic energy, comedic like timing and energy. Like it works for her, and it's surprising that she does. I mean, given that Anchorman, everyone else in that movie has done lots of things. It's surprising that she hasn't done really much.
Are there other characters in the movie that add some flair, like the kids or Chevy Chase?
The kids are just annoying. Chevy Chase has like
for the first 5 minutes, and then it just keeps going.
Chevy Chase has a small role in the film, and while like it's not amazing, and it's odd to look at Chevy Chase because he's now Chevy Chase, and it's sad, but like he doesn't have to do much to make me laugh, even though I feel like I strongly dislike him. I feel like I know too much about Chevy Chase to really like him, but like
there's
a scene where he has to like pull a guitar out of a closet. And like somehow he opens the door and normally you just pull a guitar out and it's done. But Chevy Chase is like funny enough with physical comedy where he's like somehow behind the door at the end of the scene. And it just there's no reason that should like happen, but it's just funny when Chevy Chase does it.
Well, I thought Chevy Chase was funnier in his few scenes than Ed Helms was in.
I'd agree with that because he's Chevy Chase.
And the cameos are hit or miss.
I would say that sorority scene with Christina Applegate's fine. I think the one like well directed funny scene in this movie, and that's my thoughts on the movie basically, is that it has one really well directed scene, is the Charlie Day scene.
I love that scene.
The river rafting. I think that's like the one scene that like fits everything that you're supposed to do in a vacation movie in terms of like the kind of send up of vacations and like having something originally fun that's funny in it. Like it just that scene works. The rest of the movie is just there's like some chuckles here and there, but it's like it's mean without having the kind of wit or like honest heart that really lies at the core of the film. That's my problem with it. Like I feel like, and it feels like there's a lot of jokes that are cut short. Like it feels like there's some like terrible like 3 hour version of this movie that's horrible, and this is like what's left after they
most likely, right?
Yeah.
Although I did like the cow getting hit.
Yeah, but like at the same time, it's like there's that whole Chris Hemsworth sequence, and that ends with that. But that's it. Like it just. Like everything ends.
Yeah.
Like there's no like the punchlines. Like it just feels poorly edited. Like there's just so many like setups for things that feel like they kind of go away or they don't know how to quite end them, but they have like a good way to set things up. It's just it's kind of sad.
Yeah. The worst for me was the Ron Livingston.
Yeah. Like there's
like that's just
Ron Livingston.
Forced.
Yeah. He had there's like this really really small subplot involving Ron Livingston that just comes out of nowhere and then just like reappears and it just.
TPS
reports? Not TPS reports.
No. But it's sad. And like as far as my thoughts on vacation go, it's not like a series that I like super love. Like I enjoy bits and pieces of the first Vacation and Christmas Vacation and the others are those films.
No European Vacation for you?
Oh god, no. And people, like,
there are a couple of really funny scenes in that movie though.
Yeah, there's some bits that work in there.
And he's in Europe and he looks up at the billboard. Yeah. His wife on that is
yeah, or just the roundabout they caught in. Like, look, kids, Big Ben. Like that bit's funny. Like, there's stuff. I mean, it's impossible for Chevy Chase not to like be completely unfunny in a movie, unless it's Nothing But Trouble. We don't need to talk about the movie ever. Is it Nothing But Trouble? Well, no, that's the other one. What's the movie with Chevy Chase and like Dan?
Oh, that's
like,
awful. That is awful. That's the one with John Candy.
With John Candy and Dan Aykroyd. It's like, what is that called?
Oh man, John Candy. I miss that guy.
That was with Demi Moore. It's
with
awful.
Demi Moore too. Yeah. What's it called?
Oh, isn't it?
That is Nothing But Trouble.
Yeah, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think so.
Isn't Nothing But Trouble that one with Nick Nolte and Julia Roberts?
That's I Love Trouble.
Nothing But Trouble. Okay. What are we Trouble movies that are terrible? right.
Big no, you've got the right title.
Nothing But Trouble. Okay. That movie's – why are we talking – that movie's worse than another movie that we're not talking about.
4.8 stars on IMDb. That's pretty low for IMDb.
No, I mean, the vacation scene, what bothered, like, and Mark, you say, like, if you were younger, you might have, or when you saw it, if you were young, you might have a bit. Like, I also saw, like, Stripes and Meatballs and Caddyshack and Animal House when I was young, and I liked those movies a lot. I think what probably bothers me about the Vacation series is that they're fairly mean. Like, that's always what gets me. Like, they're fairly
mean.
You
mean the first one?
Yeah, the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm. So.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't really get the sense of the first one being, or the original Vacation being... too mean. I can see what you mean by them being mean, but
I mean everything involving grandmas and dogs.
right. I was gonna say the dog.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's. Anyway,
but it's more of just a visual gag.
It is.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, we should probably move on. Mark.
So, Mark, what have you seen this week or recently?
Oh, so I saw the Stanford Prison Experiment, which was a psychology experiment that was conducted at Stanford University back in like I want to say 1971. With students to recreate the conditions of a prison, with some of the students being chosen as the prisoners and the other group being chosen as the guards. And the experiment went horribly wrong, or I don't know, or right, if you
could have been horribly right, yeah.
Depending on like how you think it's studying human behavior. It's very, it's well done, but it's a very difficult movie to watch. It's pretty messed up. And I couldn't say that I enjoyed the film, but I think it was a fascinating look into what happened. So it's well done.
Is the movie set in 71 or is it just based off the experiment?
No, it's set in 1971.
So it's like a recreation or whatever.
It's a recreation and it's well done, but it's very claustrophobic. The whole thing takes place in the basement of the psychology building, which is presented as a prison. So there's not like a whole lot of, it's just very intense. And the things that the students do to each other are pretty messed up. Billy Crudup is in it. He's playing the psychologist that's in charge of the experiment. Ezra Miller is one of the students in the group.
It has like every like young cast member that's been in an indie movie in the past like 3 years.
Yeah,
Ezra Miller, Ty Sheridan, Michael Angarano, Moises Aries, Nicholas Braun, Keir Gilchrist, Thomas Mann, who's currently in Mean Girl and the Dying Girl. Like, there's like so many people that have seen like all these indie kid movies.
Yeah, it's very well acted. And then also I saw this is actually something that came out last year, but it was recently released to video. It's called White God, and it was a Hungarian movie having to do with dogs and a girl and her relationship with her dog and her father. And it was very well done. Also another movie that's kind of difficult to watch in parts, but very powerful. And the dog, or there's lots of dogs, but there's sort of one main dog that's the girl's pet, puts in a performance that's incredible. I mean, obviously the director has to be credited with extracting this performance, but the dog is incredible. I mean, like, you can actually register, like, he's almost registering human emotion in scenes. It's quite amazing. And it doesn't appear that they're using CGI. I mean, I was watching this film and I could not believe what I was seeing. Some of the stuff that, like, the way that the dog is acting and how the drama unfolds. But very, very good. But again, most people love dogs, and you're going to have a hard time with this film because there's definitely some scenes that are hard to watch.
How did you see this film, Mark? I'm just curious.
It's through Netflix, but it's not on instant streaming.
You got the disc.
I got the disc.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's actually coming to streaming soon. I think it comes like later this month, but I am curious because we talked about this last week. It came out last week, so yeah, I'm very curious to see it.
But you know, when it played in theaters, it was very limited, and so I didn't get a chance to see it. And so I was really wanting to see it. So when it came out on DVD, I put it in my queue right away.
That reminds me of something else that's limited that I really want to check out, which is The End of the Tour. And is it just playing in New York and LA?
Yeah, it's going to expand next week and weeks after. But I actually saw that film about like 2 months ago almost now. But I really like it a lot, actually. Cool. I think I might have even mentioned it on the show, but it's a solid two-hander. I think both Jason Segel and Jesse Eisenberg are very good in the film. Segel in particular, because he's cast a little bit against type. But you can when you watch the film, you can see why Segel is just the right person to play that role. But it's a very good film, and I like that director, James Ponsell. He did The Spectacular Now and Smashed, which are both films I like quite a bit.
Yeah. So, both about problems with addiction.
Yeah, this one's a little different, but it's a good two-hander. That's what I like saying about it, because it really is. It's just a solid like talkie between two guys going on this road trip in various ways, whatever that works. I saw the trailer like a couple times because I saw two movies this weekend that I'm going to talk about right now. The first is Amy. This is a documentary about Amy Winehouse. It's very good. It's from the director of Sina. I know, Abe, you know that as well.
Yes, sure.
I've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks in terms of I wanted to see it, so I'm glad I actually finally got to see it. My girlfriend and I went and saw Amy, and we really enjoyed it. Like, I think it's a little long, but it's a solid doc. It's really, obviously, it's somewhat tragic just based off what you already know.
Well, you know what the events,
you know it's going to unfold, and the film, like, once it gets to a point, it just ends because there's nothing really else, but it's very straightforward in that manner. But I enjoyed it quite a bit, and it's very interesting to learn more about someone and see another side as opposed to the kind of a reputation. You can see what's behind that, and it's unfortunate with things that happen, but there's certainly a very talented person in that story. I also saw Woody Allen's latest film, Irrational Man, which is a very forgettable Woody Allen film, which is unfortunate. Which is a shame because I was kind of hoping that pattern would stick where, you had Midnight in Paris, which is great. And then you had To Rome with Love, which is like, whatever. And then you have Blue Jasmine, which is great. And then you had,
but Woody Allen goes through these periods where he has,
Yeah, but then it was the every other year thing. So I was hoping, because last year's was Magic in the Moonlight. I did not like that film very much, and I was like, all right, well now we're on the good year again, right? And that didn't turn out to be true.
Yeah, this is in terms of box office. This is kind of in his category of like Cassandra's Dream in September.
Because nobody is seeing this movie. I realized it came out, and I was like, oh, it's out. I didn't realize it was out until like I saw it like randomly pop up, but I mean, yeah, it has Joaquin Phoenix and Emma Stone, among others, but the film, it's kind of too long. Woody Allen movies are never, like, too long. They just kind of, you can either kind of feel the energy he has in the story or not, and it just feels like a movie where it takes its time to set itself up, and people are talking, and it's Woody Allen dialogue, so it's kind of enjoyable, and then it, like, decides to have a plot all of a sudden. And it's just ideas that he's, and you know, it's not unlike Woody Allen to explore ideas that he hasn't explored already, but at the same time, it just feels very familiar.
Who's the Woody Allen character in this movie?
Well, I guess it's supposed to be Joaquin Phoenix, but just okay. Different. Like, there's more confidence in him, even though he plays a depressed character. He's neurotic in a different sort of way, I guess. And he's fine. Like, he's not bad. No one's really bad in this movie. It's just like, it's just really forgettable. That's my takeaway from it. That's a rational man. All right. That was on our quickies.
Yep.
Let's move on to movie trailer talk, where we talk about one of the newest trailers of the week, what we thought of it, what's coming out, and what have you. And this week, I want to make sure I get the title right, because there's a short way of saying it, and there's a long way of saying it. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds.
Wait, are there colons and whatnot in this one?
Yeah. Here we go. 13 Hours: The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. This is the newest film from director Michael Bay, who seems to be going the Peter Berg route of making a film that comes out in January, or even the Clint Eastwood route of making a military film that comes out in January, hoping it gets to a large acclaim. The film is about an American ambassador who was killed during an attack on a U.S. compound in Libya as a security team struggles to make sense out of the chaos. It features a ton of character actors.
Yes, absolutely.
Was it James Badge Dale, who I like quite a bit, is in there, along with a ton of other people that you recognize if you watch the trailer.
John Krasinski.
And
everyone's favorite.
It's neat seeing John Krasinski, because like I had just seen him in Aloha, so he's already kind of like built, because he plays like a helicopter pilot in that movie. And yeah. So I'm like, oh, yeah, he fits right in here. He's already like, I get this. That must have been the weight he was gaining for this movie, except now he has a beard. But this film is based off a true story. It has Michael Bay settling, much like he went with Pain and Gain, where he's like, I'm going to take a break from robot movies and see what I can do here. And it comes from a script by Chuck Hogan. It's based off a book by Mitchell Zukov. And I'm curious, what do you guys think of this trailer? Let's start with Jordan.
Can't wait. I love Michael Bay when he's not doing Transformers movies. As much as I think I enjoy the Transformers movies more than most people, but Pain and Gain and like a weird alternate universe, that's my favorite movie of all time. I've seen that movie countless times, and it's always enjoyable. And so to see him do something like this with his weird warped morals and politics.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think it's gonna be awesome.
Mark?
So when I heard we'd be discussing the trailer for 13 Hours, I thought, okay, I need to go online and watch it. And then I realized that I had actually seen it, but it played before Mission Impossible. So and then I was like, okay, I have seen this. But it was sort of forgettable. I mean, it looks like Michael Bay is trying to be a little more serious. He's doing his like Zero Dark 30, Black Hawk Down kind of thing. But you know,
it's his Lone Survivor, American Sniper type thing.
Well, yeah, and given the release date, it's totally going for that kind of a audience. I think that the first half of the trailer was all tense and quiet, and then the second half is sort of a montage of action scenes. It looks, you know, probably okay, but it didn't really like impress me or anything. It wasn't something that I felt like I had to rush out and see.
Abe?
Yeah, it certainly doesn't register with me on a huge scale either, and that's not because the topic is interesting. I mean, if you really want to know about it, go read the U.S. Senate report about this investigation on Benghazi. I mean, that thing is like hundreds of pages, and they're still not really sure what's happening. I mean, it's still something that's being talked about even today. But on the whole, it does give me the Black Hawk Down vibes in terms of a distressed situation. You know, they got to send in some elite soldiers or former soldiers who are operators, I suppose. But it It feels like it's on the scale of these six guys or four guys that go out and they're basically going to save everybody, or they're really going to be really cool and go against the guy who told them that they shouldn't go out, like who's played by the guy from The Wire. Or I'm sorry, not The Wire, from Breaking Bad.
He's in The Wire also.
Is he?
Yeah.
As who? This is news. This is great.
He's in like the fourth and fifth season.
Is he like
he's in the
cop?
Fifth season for sure.
Oh, he's a newspaper guy.
I believe so.
Okay, all right. Yeah, but no, I mean, I feel as though you're maybe as a more advanced viewer, you're probably going to see a lot of the same tropes that you see in a lot of these kind of wartime action movies. So I am curious, because you brought the pain and gain part, which I didn't even think about, which is a good breakaway from some of the typical Michael Bay stuff. But I feel as though I'm not going to be like that thoroughly engaged with this movie, or just moved beyond what Michael Bay wants me to feel.
I mean, the best thing I think he can do is, if he makes a movie as good as Black Hawk Down, I'd be very impressed. Or at least, you know, something that fits into that
category. I would be impressed.
If he fits in somewhere that's more along the lines of Lone Survivor, I'd be less impressed, but I'd still be impressed by the action, which I'm not going in thinking I'm not going to be, because Michael Bay, and regardless of thoughts on his movies as a whole, he, especially in movies that, you know, don't involve Transformers, which again, I'm not the biggest adversary against the Transformers. I don't hate those movies. I don't dislike, I don't, you know, love them, but I don't dislike them intensely. But movies that aren't that, he knows how to construct an action sequence. And a movie like this, which is grounded in real world, I think he'd be able to deliver some really good action sequences. Now, does this movie need nothing but action sequences? No, it needs something else to go with it. And what I think Michael Bay is able to do is get great casts for his films, even those Transformers films, which seem to be mostly actors from Coen Brothers movies. So looking at this movie that has the cast that it does, I get excited. And movies that Michael Bay does, they tend to be as good as their scripts, because he's not a great kind of story director. He's more, you know, getting the kind of visual punches and whatnot.
Visuals,
so
yeah.
Ideally, if the script is well constructed, it's by Chuck Hogan, who's currently doing The Strain. He wrote the book The Strain with Guillermo del Toro. If that script is good, then I can only hope that I'll get a good movie out of it. Ideally, it won't have too much to say in terms of kind of what side it's trying to lean on as far as the politics go. The film will just be kind of a straightforward military operation movie, but that remains to be seen. What I do get to see is hopefully a very strongly acted movie because of the, you know, people involved that looks really good, and that's what I can hope for. That's what I got.
So. Yeah, it's a pretty generic trailer.
It is. I
but
agree.
It's the Michael Bay name that gives me hope.
It's more just the idea of this movie that makes me rather than seeing, you know, footage.
The Michael Bay name kind of just makes me ambivalent.
See, I disagree. When it's not Transformers, I get excited because you know, he's done four of those movies, so I want to see what else he does. And that's why Pain and Gain got me real excited, because he was doing something completely different. And ideally, he's doing something much different here, but we'll see.
I'm open to going into it and you know, seeing what it has to offer.
If it's anything like Bad Boys 2, it'll be the best movie of 2016.
Yes. Yeah, just, you know, just driving on. They're going to be in Miami for whatever
reason. If it's anything like The Island, it'll be a movie that gives up halfway through. 13 Hours opens January 15th, 2016. So we'll see. And now, let's move on now. Let's get to our main film review for Mission:Impossible-Rogue Nation.
Whoa. Are you okay to drive? A minute ago, you were dead.
Talking about?
This is not gonna end well.
Mr. Chairman,
the time has come to dissolve the IMF.
It's not just a rogue organization. It is a disgraced one.
Shutting down the IMF is a mistake you may regret.
Brent.
Go secure.
Go.
The syndicate is real, and they know who we are.
That should have been some of the trailer for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. This is the fifth entry in the Mission Impossible series, which finds Tom Cruise once again doing what he must to protect the world. This time, having been relegated to a rogue agent, Cruise's Hunt character is on a worldwide hunt for the leader of a mysterious organization known as the Syndicate. What he can count on are his friends, played by Simon Pegg, Ving Rhames, and Jeremy Renner. What he didn't count on was mysterious possible double agent named Ilsa Faust, played by Rebecca Ferguson, who has come to his aid at multiple times. Regardless, a lot of impossible scenarios will occur when this action film, written and directed by Christopher McQuarrie. Mark Hoban, what have been your thoughts on the Mission Impossible franchise? What did you think of this film?
So, you know, most film series are launched by the best entry, and then they continue with subsequent sequels sort of over a steady course of decreasing returns. And I think that Mission Impossible series totally bucks that trend. It started with a entry that I actually am not that fond of, and essentially the films keep getting better. I don't think that Rogue Nation is quite the doesn't quite reach the heights that Ghost Protocol did, but it's
literally
Dubai.
but it's pretty close. I'd say it's definitely on par with that, and it's definitely my top two of this series. What really sells this film is the stunts. It's, you know, essentially a series of athletic exploits that like dazzle the eye, and there's several of them, any one of which could be the climax of its own film. But here we're given like, you know, four or five set pieces, and each one is really, really good. So I was put on board. It's not deep, but it's a lot of fun, and I think it's a solid entry in the Mission Impossible series.
Jordan?
Whew. Yeah, this is a series for me where each film is better than the last. And this is my favorite out of the series.
A lot of credits go to this John Woo movie, apparently, Mission Impossible 2.
I love Mission Impossible 2.
I like Mission Impossible 2.
I like it too, but I'm not putting that over De Palma's entry. But whatever, go on.
It's so stupid. And so,
we can talk about the first one, but that one is probably the only one that I would actually give a negative review to.
Wow.
I
still love the first one, though. And, you know, if these films keep getting better, it's going to be like one of the best movies ever made eventually. It's going to be like Mission Impossible 15. Up there with like Citizen Kane and
Citizen Hunt
and Vertigo. No, I really enjoy this movie. It's pretty much like a perfect action film for me. Like it never dragged. My problem with the last movie is it peaked at the scene in the hotel. For me, the momentum of the movie never really got back on track after that. And with this one, like it maintains that tension all the way through. I love Tom Cruise, of course, in it, but the standout was Ferguson.
Rebecca Ferguson.
Craig Ferguson.
Like, if her performance wasn't as strong, the movie would have collapsed. She's so good playing that, like, duplicitous character, and just making you think all the way through, like, oh, who's side is she on? And I loved the chemistry with her and Cruz and Benji. But also was surprising was the chemistry between Ving Rhames and Jeremy Renner. I love that the movie gave them like their own little buddy side plot. So yeah, I thought the action was top notch. I love the music. I love that the opera was incorporated throughout the rest of the film. I love the villain, Sean Harris. He's sort of like a Black Mirror version of Tom Cruise, and I love how he played that. And I thought he was the best villain since Philip Seymour Hoffman. I almost think he was a better villain than Philip Seymour Hoffman, because Hoffman was sort of the second in command to Billy Crudup, and that always kind of bugged me. So
I think it's like Hoffman's more, there's nothing to him besides villain. It's just Hoffman's performance is so good because he's Philip Seymour Hoffman, where Sean Harris, yeah, there's obvious motives in what he's trying to do with this character.
Yeah, and for all the big stunts, for all the planes and the motorcycle chases and whatnot, the scene with the most tension is just a moment where four people are sitting around at a table towards the end. Like, oh my God, it's so gripping. It's one of my favorite moments of the year so far. Yeah, I loved it.
Abe?
I hated this movie.
Well, I'm logging off.
No, I thought this movie was very enjoyable. It's definitely a really, really good summer entry into this year. And I agree with Mark. It's one of the better Mission Impossible entries into the franchise. I still like Ghost Protocol probably just a tad more. We've talked about it already. The action stunts are, the set pieces are very well choreographed, and they're huge. They're on grand scales. And you know what we need more of in movies? Motorcycle chases that are filmed very well.
That start out as car chases.
Yeah, that start out as car chases.
That start out as crazy underwater semi-drifting stunts. Because that scene is like an extension of just scenes that keep going.
That is true. When you think back on that. It did give me a lot of vibes that we've seen in some elements like BBC Sherlock and whatever else. But I like that because it's like a buddy flick, but there's consequences and there's some, you know, vests with C4 in them. And if you like Christopher McQuarrie and Tom Cruise, go see Jack Reacher. They've already done some work together. Go see Edge of Tomorrow or Live, Die, Repeat as it is on DVD. You know, I'm really excited for what that duo brings to the table. I think they're going to do another Jack Reacher, and Tom Cruise is talking about Mission Impossible 6. But for the most part, it's a pretty good movie. I agree with Mark that it's shallow in that they talk about the shadow group called?
The Syndicate.
The Syndicate. They talk about that briefly, but then they kind of move away from that because everything is just action, action, action. Which I don't mind, because why do I need to know about the Syndicate, like, on a grand scale?
I feel like I know a lot about the Syndicate.
I know a lot about it, too, yeah.
The only thing you need to know about the Syndicate is that they don't like the IMF.
This is true, yeah. But I just like the espionage aspects of things in terms of Rebecca Ferguson's character and other governments in play, which I thought was pretty neat. But I also liked Paramount's marketing for this movie. With what they did not reveal. So on the whole, it's an enjoyable summer movie. You should go see it.
I mean, I think this movie is the best Mission Impossible yet. I think it is a few hairs better than Ghost Protocol, mainly because of what Jordan said, where I feel like the movie ends a whole lot stronger than that movie does. It also has a much better villain than that movie did. But I think you guys are underselling the writing of this movie, or at least what it's trying to do. I mean, beyond like, none of these Mission Impossible movies have like plots that are all that different from each other. There's usually random person, some rogue agents that's, you know, one against the IMF, and Ethan Hunt is the only one that can stop them, mixed with his team here and there. I mean, there's a template that kind of sticks out for each one of these movies. But I think what this movie does, and what a lot of these Mission Impossible movies do for Ethan Hunt, for Tom Cruise, is provide him like a challenge to not only prove that he's, you know, the best agent, but that he is one of the best action stars and movie stars in the world. And I think this movie has a lot of fun exploring that with the way Alec Baldwin, who's hilarious in this movie, Alec Baldwin's a killer in everything he does in this movie. the writing involved with him talking about what Hunt is, what he represents, and everything that he does, and how he like
how he's gonna catch him in like a day,
that he goes
24 hours,
and that like things that he does are heavily based on luck and whatnot. I think there's a lot of great like meta subtext in there about Tom Cruise in general as an actor, and I don't think Christopher McQuarrie is beyond putting that in there. I think that's some really interesting stuff. Along with that, I think Rebecca Ferguson's character, I think she's the best female character in this series, which is this amazing summer where both Charlize Theron from Mad Max and this character from Mission Impossible are the two like best female characters of two of the best female characters of the year, next to what, like Alicia Vikander and Ex Machina, maybe. I mean, there's a lot here that I think goes beyond just the typical action movie, which is why I think it's fantastic. I think it does everything it needs to do as far as the action goes, which is impressive given that Christopher McQuarrie has done a lot of more down-to-earth action movie. I mean, yes, they did Jack Reacher and Way of the Gun, which is one of my favorite movies. Right. But certainly, and it has an amazing shootout in that movie, along with other things, but it's certainly not one that you would say, man, this is the guy that needs to show Tom Cruise holding onto a jet plane. But this is a movie that does those things. It does them very well. It has an amazing motorcycle chase. It has an amazing plane sequence. But it also has, I think, what is very strong writing. I think it does do a good job setting up these various characters. I think it does a great job at handling the supporting characters. I think Simon Pegg, who's been nothing but, like, getting more and more to do in these films, and because they realize how amazing he is in these movies, and he's such a great counter to Tom Cruise. Like, I'd love to just see a movie about them just driving somewhere. I'd love to see The Trip featuring Tom Cruise and Simon Pegg.
It's gonna be my dinner with Andre.
Yes,
Yeah.
I'm happy to see Ving Rhames back. And, you know, saw him for like a bit in Ghost Protocol.
Same here.
That's another reason why I like the movie more than Ghost Protocol. It brings back the Rhames.
You need Ving. Yeah.
Jeremy Renner has like probably the most thankless role, but he's still like very effective in it. Like, it's just, there's just a lot of great things in this movie. Like, I think
yeah, and it's a great action movie. Yeah, we've talked about this in other films in the past, where just this summer, where they just have a lot of characters, but they don't juggle them very well, and they don't juggle a lot of the plot very well with these characters. Whereas in this one, I felt as though I had enough screen time from everybody. Everyone's providing something to the table. Even when Jeremy Renner, you think that he's maybe calling them in, but you know, there's a lot of
layers, and there's
there's layers to everybody,
but that are fitting of a Mission Impossible movie.
Right, and it does remind me of the first Mission Impossible, where there are other characters, and you do get the sense of like a true espionage type movie, where you need to find out, you know, is this person double crossing you, or are they not, and is this person really dead in the first?
Ghost Protocol did that too. I mean, in terms of like incorporating the teamwork aspect. I mean, like the J.J. Abrams period of these movies has done, like, since Mission, and we talk about this in our commentary, but Mission Impossible 2. Is very much a Bond. It's like a Bond ripoff. Like, that's what that movie feels like. It's like, it's fun. It's dumb fun, but it, like, there's, if you want to talk about shallow, that's Mission Impossible 2. I mean, it's all Ethan Hunt doing crazy things. Like, there's not much teamwork work in that movie. Whereas once J.J. Abrams,
he's by himself, isn't he?
No, he has Ving Rhames there. He has some random Australian guy, and he has Tandy Newton. Yeah, I mean, they're all.
Oh, Tandy Newton's part of IMF?
No, but she's involved in the movie. Just like Rebecca Ferguson's not involved with IMF, but she's involved in this movie. And I think that since J.J. Abrams tried to bring the TV show element back, where it is,
yeah, with Felicity,
it is,
yeah.
But even then, it had Ving Rhames again, it had Maggie Q, it had Jonathan Rhys Meyers. It had like them doing missions together as a team. And Ghost Protocol did that too, where you had Paula Patton and Simon Pegg and Jeremy Renner. And now this movie does the same thing, where it has that, even with Ethan Hunt being rogue, which he seems to generally be in all of these movies for some whatever reason, like, it still has like the whole teamwork aspect, and there's a lot of things going on with multiple people at the same time. And if I think there's something to knock about this movie, it's that it feels more familiar. I think because it's the fifth entry, you're kind of recycling some of the same ideas again. And also, I think Chris McQuarrie does, like, what I like about this series is that they all have their kind of directorial stamp on them. And I think this one has the it has the least stamp on it, if that makes any sense. It feels more like a continuation of, even though these are standalone films for the most part, it feels more like a continuation of the last film than the other films, which do feel like their own thing.
Yeah, but I do feel as though, I mean, Jordan brought up the dinner sequence, or, you know, whatever, the sit-down
climax
sequence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the only thing I think Christopher McQuarrie brings to the table, which is he brings more dialogue, because there's really good intrigue about how smart Ethan is in this movie, too. You know, he's not just a spy that can do action sequences, but he's also one of the smartest intelligence agents.
Well, that reminds
in the
me
field.
Of, like, 3, when he sees, like, the skyline of Shanghai and draws, like, a parabola onto the glass to, like, make sure, like, his ridiculous bungee jump will be exactly right. Cause
he's making sure that he doesn't die.
Yes.
Yeah, I love
he's like Archer in that regard.
To his intelligence, like in this movie, Abe, you mentioned like it explores that, and the theater laughed when he said the line he says about the numbers, mm-hmm. and it seems absurd at first, but it's like, oh wait, of course he's that intelligent. He wouldn't be who he is.
Exactly.
Or it's the biggest bluff possible, which is kind of what I thought too. Like, so maybe he memorized like 3 or 4 of these numbers.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured, because I was like, wait a minute, he's going to memorize like 32 different bank accounts.
Well, we basically
numbers
know
is
that Tom Cruise, based
passwords.
Off the color of money, has a great poker face.
He does. Yeah.
That's what
poker face.
But yeah, what you're saying about the climax, I mean, that is something I admire, is that this film, I mean, the climax of this film, it's not as large scale as some of the previous action sequences, but it's rooted in character. And again, that's where I think the writing shines. I think a movie is confident enough to not have to outdo itself for its big finale. It's more confident to be like, hey, let's sit these characters down and talk about things. And I really admire that in the finale. Like,
not only that,
like, there's still action and there's some clever reveals that happen, but it does have this incredibly tense scene that, instead of saying, let's do it even bigger than we did in the, you know, the motorcycle chase, let's do something even more creative. Let's have this happen. And I really like that.
And I think that's the key word there, creativity. And that's because in that scene, and I'm not going to reveal everything, but in that scene, the way that it pans out, it's not the end of the scene. It's not as though it's like, okay, well, we've resolved this mini situation, we'll cut to something else. It actually continues for the entire end of the movie. And that is just the way that they get out of that sequence is pretty clever, because there's a request to not kill Ethan Hunt and maybe not kill Rebecca Hall, and the way that they get out of it was like, oh, that's pretty. Or, yeah, I'm sorry, Rebecca Ferguson. But I was like, oh, that's pretty clever. Yeah. Anyway, creativity.
It is creative, and there's a lot of. I mean, all the action sequences in this movie are varied. Like, there's little repetition besides like people have guns in their hands. But I mean, there's a lot of different things going.
That action sequence where he jumps into the tank of water and then has to swim down to the underwater channel in order to get that profile card switched out. That was incredible. I mean, that could have been the climax of the film. And then we've get this earlier in the movie, we get this incredible opera sequence,
which I saw
as like the man who knew too much, because there's totally a climax in that Alfred Hitchcock movie, very much in the same way, where a note is timed at the same time that they need to do something. It is, you know, a series of that. I will say that I am not quite as ecstatic about the script as you guys are. I thought it was fluff. I mean, I think it's fun, enjoyable action sequences strung together. If we're going to compare it to something that I thought was a little deeper, Mad Max is a movie that I think had a lot more themes going on.
I completely agree. Yes.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I think Aaron is like the highest on the script. I think that
I think my favorite movie of the year has a better script than Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. But
right. I mean, and that also has a little bit to do with the female characters in that film. I thought that Rebecca Ferguson is excellent in this, and she does kind of recall sort of this old Hollywood glamour of like Lauren Bacall or something. She's very sort of serious, but then, you know, intelligent and also has the ability to kick somebody's ass. But so she's great. But I don't think it's not fair to compare movies because it has to stand on its own. But I mean, if we're comparing it to like Charlize Theron and Mad Max, it's like, okay, that's like a character that's like several levels higher.
There's more there.
Absolutely.
I agree. She's also the only female character in this movie, which is, you know, whatever. But I mean,
well, there's the record shop girl.
Yeah. Okay. But they still give her a lot. I mean, she could have been really shallow and weak.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a sex object who's also like a love interest. She's none of that. She's her own character, and I like that
she's
has
Tandy
her own agency.
Newton.
It subverts your expectations in that way, and that's good.
It is. That's
yeah.
And that opera house scene is like, it's a fantastic. Just,
well, I kept, you know, it's funny because the movie in the trailer, you see the scene of him jumping on the plane, and the movie essentially starts out with that.
Yeah.
And so you're like, wow, the movie is starting with this major scene. Then we get this opera scene, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like a climax of, you know, of its own movie. And then they have that water tank scene, which probably is my favorite. But I mean, it's like, you know, splitting hairs because they're all so good. And then we have some interesting and very interesting, you know, a chase sequence can be very cliched, but this one has one that starts on a motorcycle and then it starts on a car and then it's a motorcycle. And I mean, at one point he's running through the streets of London. I mean, there's so much packed into this film and it's very well done. Like it never gets boring, or you never sort of feel like, oh, I've seen this before. It feels fresh. And that's
the thing I want. Yeah, the other thing I want to ask you guys is, has Ethan Hunt, like, shot and killed anybody in the past movies before?
Yes.
I mean, he probably has, right?
Yeah, Mission Impossible, the first one's the only one where there's no shootouts.
Dying? Okay.
There's no shootouts in that movie. It's all, like, hand-to-hand stuff and various other things that happen.
Yeah, the only reason I asked that, because in Rogue Nation, it doesn't start out with him necessarily shooting anybody, but toward the end there, he's just, like, really upset and pissed off. He just starts...
Well, it's a means to an end. Yeah. That's how he uses violence, which is the same in all of these movies. I mean, Mission Impossible 2 has the highest body count easily because it has John.
They also have unlimited bullets for handguns.
And you ask if he's shot and killed anybody. Yeah, he's like sliding around using dual pistols, John Woo style, Mission Impossible 2. Yeah, he's killed lots
true.
Of people.
Yeah, I'm also thinking like Part 3.
Part
3
is like running
a gun
with Kerry Russell and stuff.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, wait a minute, what am I talking about? But anyway, no, I just thought that was an interesting sight. Is just, he doesn't really kill anybody with a gun per se in the first mission, or in the first three quarters of the movie. In the last quarter, he's kind of going all
there
out.
Is like a sense, I mean, he does like run over people in cars.
Yeah, that's true. But you would think that they're okay because they're wearing helmets.
He does, you know, a guy gets impaled in another scene also, but you know, whatever. that is something to McQuarrie. I mean, I'm saying his stamp isn't like as clear as I think as some of the others.
I know what you
others
mean.
Are because he's not
like Brad there. Birds is like, wow, this is very much like a live
or,
action
or
Incredibles
like,
kind of thing.
Yeah, and like Wu and yeah. De Palma obviously have their own directorial stamp because they're auteurs in their own sense. But like right. McQuarrie, he does bring like a level of grittiness, I think, which is like it's somewhat cliche to say, but I follow that up with this movie is a ton of fun. There is so much fun happening in this movie. There's so many like great funny lines, not just Simon Pegg, but just so many other people. It is
Tom Cruise is saying some funny lines.
Yeah, it's got a sense of humor.
Yeah, even though it's subtle, it's there. And I do want to bring up what Jordan talked about too, which is the villain. I like the villain. I liked Sean Harris's character because he's thought about things too. He's not just like I'm gonna do this because I want to destroy the world. It's like no, I want to do this because there's a lot of things that the IMF has done wrong or that have been wronged by people like me, and I'm gonna recruit some shadow organization.
What I thought
and
was
pretty clever. That they
maybe I missed something, but what I thought was kind of funny is that when they're trying to look for this character, what they essentially had was an artist's sketch. Like in all this technology, don't they just have like a, you know, a digital photo
a database?
Like, there is so
well, they had to get the sketch. Like and he does it in Protocol too. He draws like he draws a picture on his hand of the guy to try and get them to identify it. Basically, Ethan's an artist. He's
the
Da Vinci of IMF.
He really
that's
is.
What that's what we were.
That's why he was recruited.
Yeah. He built his own flying machine. It's just him in a suit.
It's just him in a suit. He's just flying in a suit.
I do agree the music's quite good too. This is from Jill Kramer, who's scored all of McQuarrie's films, and he has the
Kramer versus Kramer. Yeah,
Kramer versus Kramer's Jill Kramer, and he based off his story. He's now become a film composer with one son. He hasn't done too much. But what he has done, I've been impressed with, and it's nice to see him back here doing him. Now he's like, it's like because his friend Christopher McQuarrie gave him the job of scoring Mission Impossible, and it's a great score. Yeah. It does a good job of incorporating that theme and the opera stuff, like you won't, Mark mentioned.
Yeah, and it definitely gets you upbeat and going on the sequences. Yeah.
I think we really all like Mission Impossible Rogue Nation quite a bit, guys.
I think so too.
So definitely, I think we all would easily recommend this film to see in theaters right away, right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
100%.
The stamp of the directors. And his stamp could just be like great dialogue. It has some of the best dialogue of the entire series. And some
McQuarrie has been working
the
with
best exchanges.
Like Abe, you mentioned this. McQuarrie has been working with Cruise quite a bit. He's worked with him on Edge. He helped develop the script for Edge of Tomorrow. He did Jack Reacher with him, of course. He also did Valkyrie, I believe. And he's done.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Valkyrie.
And he's also, and I think I talked about this in commentary too, but he's done a lot of like. He's one of those guys that sits behind the scenes and does a lot of like uncredited rewrites on a lot of scripts. And I think because he and Cruise are clearly friends, he's probably aided in a number of his films also, like beyond the ones mm-hmm. that, you know, he's fully credited for. But he's like one of the like David Koepp or David Hayter, mm-hmm. the first X-Men. Like he's one of those guys that kind of like they do script doctoring, or even Joss Whedon back in the day. Like they do a lot of script doctoring work just to kind of do things.
Punch it up.
Yes.
Yes. I think that's the term that they use in Hollywood.
Yeah, thank you for that behind the scenes knowledge.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're welcome. all the way from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Hollywood Abe. That's what we call you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just call me Hollywood Abe Magpie. I don't know.
There's the crickets again. Moving on. I think that's our review of Mission Impossible - Rogue Nation. Let's get now to our sponsor just for a bit here. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible includes like over 180,000 audiobooks for your Android, Kindle, or any other kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com. It's an out now podcast. You can choose a book to download for free and start listening. It's just that easy. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You can get a book for free. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of the service, but you get to keep that book that you downloaded for free. So be a winner.
Read
or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, let's move on now, Abe. Let's get to some out now feedback.
Feedback.
So we'll go over some of the various questions and answers that we received on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where you guys answered a number of our questions that we asked, and we also took some questions from you that we're going to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to start this one off here. This one asks, what's your favorite action or major sequence from the Mission Impossible series? Tyler writes, first Mission Impossible I saw was Mission Impossible 2. I always think of the rock climbing first, but definitely masked misdirection plus motorcycle blowout at the end. Justin has, dang, I think I've only seen the first one. They're on my list to get to them, but I haven't been into them that into them. I did see three, but I can say it has Paul Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, but I confuse it with the memories of Night and Day. Okay. A long-winded way of saying I haven't seen them. Manish writes, the train fight in Mission Impossible 1 and the building, the Burj Khalifa in Ghost Protocol. Philip has the hole flying through the window in Dubai, so the Burj Khalifa again. And Jason has the rescue of the villain in the third one and Ethan's escape from prison in the Ghost Protocol.
From that train sequence, I just remember, like, the red light, green light. Puts
that whole train sequence is, I just watched all these movies last week, and they're sequence is awesome.
Also, a weird question we should have asked is, Ethan Hunt with long hair or short hair? Let us know later. Anyway, next question we ask everybody is, favorite Simon Pegg films? Tyler writes, just watch Hot Fuzz. Absolutely loved it. Richard writes, Paul, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, World's End, Star Trek, even though a TV show, even his British TV show, Spaced. Justin writes, well, I have Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead on my NAS to watch, but haven't seen them yet. So I have to say Box Trolls.
He does have David a sad role in the Box Trolls.
David writes, Hot Fuzz, nothing he's done has been as good as his TV show Space and Big Train. I haven't seen Big Train. I may have to take a few episodes in. Rob writes, Hot Fuzz is my favorite of the Coronado trilogy, and I think The World's End is the funniest. Adam writes, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and Star Trek Into Darkness. Manish writes, I really liked him in Run, Fat Boy, Run, also Hot Fuzz. Philip writes Hot Fuzz. It wasn't at all what I expected. Shalem has Shaun of the Dead as one of my favorites all day. And Mike writes Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, The World's End, and Paul. So a lot of the Cornetto trilogy is in this love of Simon Pegg.
Did you guys see Kill Me Three Times?
I did.
Aaron.
Horrible.
Yeah, it's not.
Good. I did not like that. I actually turned it off halfway through.
Wow. That's like me and Mr.
I like him. What? It's random.
Yeah, it's a different. It's a tangent.
Yeah. So, where did that come from?
We don't. We shouldn't get Mr. into Bean. It. No.
I actually love Mr. Bean. So.
I like both those Bean. I like Bean on Vacation.
Yeah.
Next question is: what could Tom Cruise do to top himself in the sixth Mission Impossible film? April writes: get a role as a Marvel hero, or better yet, a villain. Tyler writes, die doing a stunt, then bring himself back to life. Looks so good they keep it in film. Philip writes, jump out of an airplane without a chute like Captain America in The Winter Soldier. For real. Jason writes, run into a real explosion and live. I like this. Like, he's becoming the Chuck Norris. Christopher writes, Top Gun sequel with CGI.
He should impersonate Barack Obama.
And then mask lift.
Rip his arm off and then attach it with the other arm. Reattach it with the other arm.
The next question we ask everybody is, what director should handle the next Mission Impossible film? Rob writes, I'd say Christopher Nolan, but he just made a movie that's completely on his own and doesn't feel and doesn't fit the feel of the series. Let's go with Edgar Wright. So a lot of meta humor. Adam writes, Matt Reeves or Jon Favreau? Justin writes, JJ with practical sets. Philip has Guillermo del Toro. And lastly, Richard writes, me! Let me do it! So I guess the answer is Richard Sheldon.
Matt Reeves is a good idea. I can see that. Let's see. Now we have one question here. This one's from Philip. Which scenes is the most awkward 80s? Beach volleyball in Top Gun or Kevin Bacon doing gymnastics in the barn in Footloose?
I'd go with the volleyball scene. No, just crickets. Huh?
I'd probably say it's an intense question. Abe, this is a question that can make or break this podcast, okay?
I mean, awkward 80s? I would go with the volleyball. I mean, totally 80s? The gymnastics in the
box? There's just two choices? I feel like...
Only two.
If you want to throw in some write-in suggestions.
Unless you want to throw in your own, yeah. Philip only wrote two.
What do you have, Mark? Montages?
I mean, awkward 80s.
I would say beach montage scenes.
Yeah.
Which just is basically like beach volleyball. Flexing. I mean, it's not like they watch the full game. Yeah. That would be a move. The entire beach.
But he's got to go. He's got to go have dinner with the girl from...
from Witness?
Yeah.
Kelly McGillis? The girl from Top Gun? That's like that's the role you'd say.
That's the role that... Yeah, I forgot her name, and I was trying to think of another movie she's in.
Did you have something, Mark?
Not off the top of my head.
Well, he seemed like he did. Like he messed up. Jordan?
No, I don't have anything.
Beach volleyball or gymnastics?
Beach volleyball wins, then.
Beach volleyball.
Okay. All right. Let's. That was that. Now feedback.
Feedback.
Get to our. What time? Abe, what time is it, Aaron? Let's go.
Aaron, I think it might be time for some awesome games. Slower this week.
And, wow, and quieter, that was, a little bit more introspective.
That was like Aaron hunting for somebody in an opera house.
Nailed it.
Very nice.
Nailed out. Good one, Abe.
I've got a game for you guys this week.
What is it?
It's Before and After Tom and Simon Edition. I personally love these kind of games. This is where I read a clue from a Tom Cruise film or a Simon Pegg film, and I match it up with another movie, so you have to give me the final result. So, for example, a stop-motion rooster voiced by Mel Gibson must come up with 100,000 Deutschmarks in 20 minutes to save the lives
chicken
of the...
Chicken Run, Lola Run.
That is correct.
I knew the Chicken Run, but...
So, essentially, mashing two movie titles together and give me the final movie title. So, here we go.
And it's the Tom and Simon edition?
Yes. There's only two Simon Pegg questions. Everything else is Tom Cruise.
Oh, okay.
If Tom Cruise really wanted to meet or to test his newly acquired katana skills, he should go up against Akira Kurosawa's group.
See, that doesn't already make
The Last
sense.
Seven Samurai?
That is correct, Mark. Boom. Too much talking, Aaron. Next one.
But should it be like The Last Samurai is the first part and the second part's the net, not like mixing the movies in to get there? Well, go on.
The other
whatever.
Ones would be
but
okay.
He's done that before, though.
I know.
A new comedy always... starring Tom Cruise as a cop who stops crime before it happens, but only in a mall with Seth Rogen.
Minority Observant Report?
I'm going to go with Aaron.
We should yell out her name. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
You could do that. Simon Pegg enters a marathon with Liam Neeson, all while trying to keep Joel Kinnaman safe from Ed Harris.
Aaron. Run, Fat Boy, Run All Night?
That's correct.
See, that fits. That's the whole title. Yeah.
Tom Cruise driving a stock car as studio exec Les Grossman with Robert Duvall as pit crew chief would be quite a new take on the sports racing genre.
Aaron. Days of Tropic Thunder?
That's correct. Tom Cruise's pilot character Maverick teams up with Mark Wahlberg and Denzel Washington to stop drug runners and corrupt CIA operatives.
Aaron? Top Two Guns?
That's also correct.
Hey, Jordan, you're playing, right?
No, he's not. He's actually went to go get some cheese.
Okay. Ew.
Tom Cruise.
What was the Denzel Washington movie?
Two Guns.
Okay.
Classic.
Mark Wahlberg. Next one. Tom Cruise takes his pool shark skills to the next level by using math as well as baseball statistics.
Aaron. The Color of Moneyball?
That's correct. Tom Cruise teams up with Dustin Hoffman to get the girl that they're taking care of back from drug cartels with a special cameo by Denzel Washington.
What a Denzel.
Mark. Yeah.
Rain Man on Fire.
That's correct.
More Denzel than Simon Pegg in this game so far.
Yeah, Denzel Washington is showing up a lot.
I had to put in those extras just in case, I guess.
All right.
Next one. Bill Murray pens the script and co-stars alongside Tom Cruise, attempting to understand life, but repeating things over and over.
I don't think Bill Murray co-wrote that script, but
He wrote the script and he's co-starring alongside Tom Cruise.
Edge of Groundhog Day?
You got half of it.
Yeah.
Bill Murray pens the screenplay and co-stars.
Thanks.
Oh, Razor's Edge of Tomorrow.
That's correct.
We were thinking of the wrong movie. Because he had Bill Murray, so you thought Groundhog's Day.
But he wrote Razor's Edge.
Hey, that might be the cleverest answer you've ever given on a game.
There you go. Boom.
Because that was confusing. You had the over and over, but then you put Bill Murray in it, but then that wasn't the movie.
That's why it's Abe's most cleverest answer that he's ever
given.
Bill
Murray was also, he did star in Razor's Edge.
Yeah, that's what you threw us off, which was clever.
He pens the screenplay. Anyway. A new Marvel legal drama starring Tom Cruise as Lieutenant Daniel Caffey being sent back through time with mutants to prevent a Sentinel program from ever coming into his existence.
A Few Good X-Men Days of Future Past?
That's correct! Last one. Tom Cruise and Simon Pegg team up against tripod fighters while trying to complete a 12-bar pub crawl. Hopefully Nick Frost is in it.
What's the first part?
War of World's End?
That is
oh yeah.
That is correct. Jordan with one.
War of the World's End, that's what it was?
Yeah. Okay. Aaron, you ran away with this one. You are the winner this week, sir.
Oh, thank you. Not for lack of trying.
No.
Stiff.
Ran away with it. Did he run, fat boy, run?
Ran a marathon with it. Anyhow, those games.
All right, thank you. all right, let's move on now to what to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray, DVD, or streaming this week. We have a number of things here, actually. It's a good week. It's been a rough couple weeks, and so now we're back to some stuff here. Not necessarily all good, but some good stuff. First up is Insurgent.
Don't see it.
That's that Divergent sequel that we all love.
Yeah, that happened.
Yeah, that happened. One of Jai Courtney's best, that's what I say.
He's in it.
Yeah, he is.
Is Jai Courtney a friend of the show?
No, not yet.
He's more like a nemesis of the show.
You mention him a lot.
We do.
Yeah.
Well, you know, keep your friends close, your enemies closer. That's what I say.
He's kind of inherited the throne of Sam Worthington.
Oh, for sure. I have nothing against Sam Worthington. I don't think he's the most talented, but I don't. He doesn't stick out like a sore thumb in movies like Jai Courtney does. He's more serviceable. Not actively bad, except Jack Reacher, obviously, Abe, right?
Jack Reacher, I mean, he's good, pretty good in that.
Next up, we have The Salvation. This was a Danish Western starring Mads Mikkelsen that I enjoyed.
I do enjoy Mads.
Let's see. Next up, we have True Story. This was the James Franco Jonah Hill drama that was not very good. I didn't like it very much at all.
Okay.
But it does, you know, have those two dramating up. Next up, we have Far From the Madding Crowd, which I like quite a bit. Mark, I know you're a little more mixed on that one.
Yeah, it was okay.
I like it a lot. From the director of The Hunt, by the way.
It needed Keira Knightley.
I like that Carrie Mulligan. I think she does good.
Oh, I like Carrie Mulligan, too. That's nothing against her, but it's so it's just one of those things that Keira Knightley likes to do.
Next up, we have Child 44, which had Tom Hardy, Gary Oldman, and no one going to see it in theaters last April. So there's that. That's a movie. And then we had A Little Chaos. This is a period drama with Kate Winslet. Did anyone see this movie?
Mm-mm.
Mark, did you see A Little Chaos?
No.
I
don't know anything about it.
It kind of came and went. It was like one of those. It was a period drama with Kate Winslet, so it's, you know, expected. But I just didn't.
Alan Rickman direct it?
I don't know if he. I know he's in it. Did he direct it? No,
Alan Rickman directed it, and Matthias Schoenaerts is also in it.
Oh, wow. Matthias Schoenaerts? Oh, I like him. He's in Far From the Madding Crowd.
Well, yeah, the movie got pretty bad reviews, though.
All right. Well, there you go. next up,
it's like put that under the category like Serena, which like incredible cast, but like gets horrible reviews for some reason. And I say for some reason because I haven't seen either of them.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Barely Lethal, which is some spy comedy with Hailee Steinfeld that comes out this week. I think I'm reviewing the Blu-ray, actually, of it.
Mm.
Hailee Pitch Perfect 2 Steinfeld?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Hailee True Grit Steinfeld.
I haven't even heard of this movie.
It has Samuel L. Jackson.
He plays like a CIA head or whatever.
Yeah, and other people that I know that I can't think of right now. next up, we have Strike Back Season 3. A show that I have not seen season 1 or 2 and barely know anything about.
There you go.
Okay, but there's probably some fans out there, so if you wanted to know when Strike Back season 3 is coming
tell
out.
Tell us what it is.
Yeah. I think it stars, what's his name, from 300, the new 300, 300, you know, 301.
The guy?
Sullivan, like Stephen Sullivan, something like Stapleton, something like that. Or maybe, I think Armitage, isn't that? Like Thor?
Richard?
Yeah, the Red Dragon. If you're not watching Hannibal right now, guys, by the way, Hannibal, it's turning.
I need to see that show.
It's currently handling the Red Dragon storyline, and it's awesome.
Ooh. Oh,
it's so good. With Richard Armitage as the Red Dragon.
Speaking of Red Dragon, Barely Lethal is produced by Brett Ratner, so you know that's got to
be. Oh, there you go.
That's nothing but fun, I guess.
Richard Armitage is not. Who am I? What show am I thinking of that has Richard Armitage in it? Then?
I don't know. Richard Armitage
I was right about the Sullivan Stapleton thing. That's that.
Hmm.
I thought Richard Armitage was in some like random show too that was like on like HBO or something that like no one watched.
Ian McShane's coming to HBO.
Yeah, he's going to be in Game of Thrones. Let's just get into news.
News.
It was Strike Back. I was right. He's on 8 episodes of Strike Back. Okay, I didn't make that up. Next up, we have Orphan Black season 3.
You're high on Orphan Black. I should start watching it.
I like Orphan Black. I think it's a good show. Next up, there's Inner Space.
Ooh,
Joe Dante's film with Dennis Quaid and Martin Short.
Inner Space.
Inner Space.
Okay.
Blast from the Past makes its Blu-ray debut this week.
I like that with Brendan Fraser. I like it too. It's kind of charming. Yeah.
Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah.
I like that movie.
He's going to sell his Babe Ruth baseball card and she stops it.
Free Willy makes its debut this week on Blu-ray.
On Blu-ray? Wow.
I hope it has the Michael Jackson music video with it. I think that'd be good.
That'd be a nice add-on.
And lastly, just because I wanted to point this one out, Night in the City. It's a Criterion release. It's a film noir about a wrestler. And I saw this movie in college in my film noir class, and I like this movie a lot. It's really good. So I feel like anyone that wants to check out some retro classics, Night in the City, now on Criterion Blu-ray, good movie. So there you go.
You heard it here first.
Here you go. That's out now. Presents out now. Let's move on now to Extremely Cool. These are movies currently streaming on Netflix that I want to recommend.
Could it be on Amazon?
Yes, it could.
Because Space Jam is on Amazon.
Space Jam is now on Amazon. Good to know, Abe. Thank you for that up-to-date one. I also want to point out Wet Hot American Summer.
Both the
movie from 16 years ago and the new Netflix television series, which I've seen the first episode, is hilarious. Those are currently streaming on Netflix. If anyone knows the show, it's based on around one long day at the last day of summer camp involving basically every cast member from The State or Reno 911, minus a couple of those guys, but a lot of funny people, including Paul Rudd when he was a lot younger, Bradley Cooper when he was a lot younger, Amy Poehler, and all of those people are back making this some kind of cavalcade of comedy superstars in this TV show. But it's a prequel to that movie. So they're all supposed to be 16, 17 years old. Just one of the big jokes in there right there. But,
That's like Steve Buscemi going back to school.
If you like movies Role Models, or obviously Wet Hot American Summer, or it's David Wayne. So it's his sense of humor, or if you're watching shows like Children's Hospital on Cartoon Network, there's a lot of that kind of sense of humor in there. So if you like that, then check it out. And check it out in general, because there's a lot of funny people in there. Next week's show, we're going to be talking about Fantastic Four.
Yes.
I want to be excited about Fantastic
Four. Yeah, there's just silence because I'm waiting for the
You're
movie.
You need to go back and add crickets through various parts of this podcast.
I want to at least root for this cast. The movie, it looks pretty generic.
When it was first announced, I feel like there was a lot of excitement surrounding it. Whatever, a year or 2 years ago.
I've heard nothing but scorn ever since this cast
since
was announced.
Then, yes.
Since it was announced. They're like, what? Black person is Human Torch? Blah! That's what I've been hearing every day.
The people who said that were
That's a lot of racism you're hearing every day.
In general, just because it's all younger, because Miles Teller and Kate Mara and Jamie Bell, they're all every step of the way, it's very rare that I've heard anyone say this seems cool, even though this does seem cool.
It's teen Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it is, and I'm nothing against that.
it's the hip. This isn't your grandma's Fantastic Four.
Yes, correct.
That's what the tagline is.
Exactly.
This isn't your grandma's Fantastic
Four. With Toby Kebbell on the poster.
Yeah. I should have marketed this film.
Damn it, Mark. Yes, you got to move to L.A.
Because it needs a sense of humor. I hope they're not overly serious about
it. I feel as though it's gonna have some humor in it.
Okay.
I feel as though they've been marketing these dark trailers just because that's what the trend in trailers tends to be.
Since people seem to make fun of the dark trailers. It's I don't know what to take away.
But I hope that it's actually more light and fun, which they tried to go for in the later trailers and the subsequent ones, because people were like, I don't think we need some more dark, heavy stuff.
They haven't really tried that as much as they just scored Kanye West power to it, and suddenly it seems more fun.
Yeah, more Michael B. Jordan chair jokes.
Well, he's Human Torch. He's supposed to be a fun character, so
I just like Michael B. Jordan in general.
I do too, and I really want
Steve Montgomery.
Steve Montgomery, yeah. I mean, he's from the director of Chronicle. So, I want to hope this does well. I'm seeing it on Wednesday, I think. Abe, you're going to see it too, because we're going to talk about it. So, hopefully, it does well. Hopefully, there's things to talk about with it, which I'm sure there will be. But we'll see how that goes.
Amazing things, hopefully.
Fantastic things, Abe.
Well, yeah, that's a good way of looping it all together.
Last thing we do here, what should people go see now, and what do you plan to see next? Mark Hoban, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
I would say Mission Impossible. I think that's... it's playing everywhere. It's an enjoyable film. It's worth seeing on the big screen because it's that kind of a film. So I would recommend that.
What do you plan to see next?
I want to see this little picture called Tangerine.
Yeah.
It was filmed on an iPhone and it's gotten a lot of press and it sounds interesting. So that's the next thing I'd like to see.
The best thing I've heard is that the gimmick of it being filmed on an iPhone is not relevant to the actual movie. It's supposed to be just a good movie.
It's just sort of an interesting thing about
it's just a fact about it. Yeah. But like, it has, you know, it's not just like, look at how crazy this is because it's an iPhone. It's like there's an actual story and characters. So,
right. It's supposed to be very well written and acted, and you know, one of these sort of like independent films that's making some inroads despite the fact that it's very low budget.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Jordan, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Go see Mission Impossible. It's everything you want in a summer action film.
What do you plan to see next?
Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Abe?
Everyone said Mission Impossible. Go see Mr. Holmes.
Did you see Mr. Holmes?
Nope. But
Mark, I wouldn't recommend it.
No.
Oh, really?
I mean, it's not horrible, but
no, it's not. But it was a letdown, honestly.
That's a bummer. Don't go see that then. Go see Jurassic World. Go see Chris Pratt. And then what I'm gonna see next? Yeah, probably gonna be. Wait a minute. I might go see Paper Towns today. But Aaron says it's not
your
that
dark
great.
Your dark horse pick of the summer.
I know my dark horse pick. I want to go see it, make sure it's worthy of my dark horse pick. But anyway, I'm probably going to see Fantastic Four next.
Oh, did we want to talk about?
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. I'm going to see Mission. I would recommend Mission Impossible. I'd also recommend Amy, just because you know it's a good document. What I like about Amy is like I liked Amy Winehouse. I was a fan of her music. But at the same time, people that aren't necessarily like giant fans or even just not fans in general, like it's just a good documentary. And I think it's certainly worth seeing. The next thing I'm going to see is Fantastic Four and maybe Ricky and the Flash, which is a movie I'm looking forward to quite a bit,
Ricky
actually.
Ricky and the Flash. Yeah.
Meryl Streep and Jonathan Demme directing. So
do you like Jonathan Demme?
Yeah. Silence of the Lambs. Same topic.
Yeah, exactly.
Same topic.
Yeah. Wait a minute. So Meryl Streep's daughter plays FBI agent Clarice M. Starling.
No, she plays the Scott Glenn character. She plays.
Wow.
Kevin
That's
Klein
great.
Plays the Clarice Starling.
I can't wait for this movie. Yeah. It's a remake.
It is a remake. Yes.
Of Academy Award winning 1993 film Silence of the Lambs.
Before we wrap up, yes, we do have like I think at least about half of the people involved in the current summer movie gamble. So I want to do a quick look through with you guys because we
Looky-loo.
So for those that don't know and should go back and revisit back in before May, we did an episode called the fourth annual summer movie gamble where myself, Abe, Mark, friends of the show, Peter Paris, Scott Mendelson, Alan Aguilera, Jose, and of course Jordan and Adam Gentry, past winner, have all predicted what we think will be the top 10 films of the summer. Needless to say, based off things that have happened this summer, there's going to be a lot of
there's a lot of mistakes.
It's
going to
be a very
part,
interesting final
sure.
countdown because for one thing, we all thought Avengers would be number one, and clearly that has not happened because of the juggernaut that is Jurassic World. But
Jurassic World is now the third highest grossing film of all time.
Ever.
Of all time, yeah.
Something none of us predicted.
All time.
Some of us even thought it'd be third place.
I said it'd be fourth place.
So it's very interesting. We also have things like Ted 2 not performing nearly as well as any of us thought, since all of us have it like 7 and higher, and it's probably not going to be on the top 10. Let's see. Pitch Perfect 2, Peter Paris is the only one that has that in a decent spot, and Adam Gentry, actually. They actually have that in a position where it makes sense. Yeah, Tomorrowland didn't do much. Terminator didn't do much. We're still waiting to see on Fantastic Four. Ant-Man is... We'll see what happens.
Ant-Man's not doing as well as we had predicted.
Ant-Man was all over the place in all of ours. Like, I have it at 7, you have it at 5, Jordan, you have it at like... Or no, Alan has it at like 3.
I have it at 6.
Or 4.
Oh, I have Ant-Man at 6.
Yeah, I
had it at 4.
You know what didn't do well at all, and it's not even gonna hit the top 10, is Ted 2.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, Ted 2.
Oh, did you say that? Okay.
Yeah, good old Ted.
We all had it fairly high, and Ted 2 is not doing well.
I don't think there was. I think every single one of us had that somewhere in our top 10.
Somehow, yep. I took San Andreas out of my dark horses and put Entourage in, which is a huge mistake because that's probably going to be on the top 10 list.
CJ really made it this summer.
I'm one of the few that has San Andreas and Mad Max both in my top 10. I might be the only one who put both of those in my top 10.
The great news is that if no more movies come out for the summer, which is impossible, Tomorrowland would be number 10, and Aaron and I would get a point.
Yeah.
No, Tomorrowland will not. I don't even think. Is it even 10?
It's number 10 currently right now.
You have it at 5.
Yeah, I know. Hey, man, it looked like a great trailer. And they just did some weird things with the narrative.
Spy's done more than Tomorrowland, I think.
It has.
Yes. Yeah.
But we'll see how well it does, because once again, it feels like I'm going to get screwed.
Did I put Terminator on my top 10, or was that
in the top? You have Terminator in your Dark Horses.
Okay.
You also have Insidious 3 in your Dark Horses.
Okay.
But City of Shepherd 3. Wow.
But yeah, nice checking on that. Lots of there's going
to
be
a lot of stuff to talk about. It's going
to be done to figure out what exactly went down with the summer. Yeah.
If Fantastic Four does about 125, then it will probably hit top 10.
You have a good shot. Yeah.
Yeah. It has to do over 100,000 though.
Because so many movies underperformed, it has a good shot of being in the top 10 of the summer, assuming that it's, you know, people want to go and see it, which they probably do. It's August. It has a lot of space to do money. That's what they call it in the business, do money.
A lot of space to do money? Yeah.
That's what they call it in the business.
Yeah.
Do money. Another thing too that's kind of interesting. I believe that Inside Out will remain higher than Minions.
We'll see. I mean, Minions is
recently
come out, so we have some time, but we'll find out.
It's been an interesting summer.
It has. All right. So with that said, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at my personal blog, DakotaZeke.com. You can find out my written movie review recaps weekly, as well as at Rant Hollywood, where I write about movies daily. You can also find me on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
You can find more of the world's news at news.google.com, and also you can follow me at twitter.com/walrusmoose. Hashtag Veep, season 4.
Jordan Grout, where can people find more of your work?
You can go to whysoblue.com. Or you can follow me on Twitter at AmsterdamChap.
Mark Hoban.
You can read more of my work on my personal blog, fastfilmreviews.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter, Mark_Hoban.
You can find all of the episodes about Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes and at Audio Boom, as well as on Stitcher.
Find our old episodes over at SoundCloud.com, Podomatic, and HHWLOD.
You can email us your thoughts on Mission Impossible, the series, or this latest film, or whatever you want at OutNowPodcast@gmail.com.
Feel free to interact with us over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast or tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And lastly, you can make our Tumblr seem worth it by going to outnowpodcast.tumblr.com and following us there. All right. Jordan, Mark, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
As always, it's always so much fun.
Good.
It's always good when we get to talk about a good movie.
And the summer box office.
It helps. Yeah. And the summer box office, yes. Yeah. We'll see what Mission Impossible does, by the way. It made like $56 million this weekend domestically, so it's got time, obviously, to make some more money, but we all have it fairly high, I think, actually, in the thoughts here. So
On the good old SBOC.
It's a movie that's certainly going to rely on word of mouth, that's for sure, and I think it's going to be very strong, so hopefully that'll pay off.
And hopefully Fantastic Four is good as well.
Hopefully Fantastic Four is good, but we'll see, and we'll talk about that on next week's show. But yeah, until next time, that's going to do it. So long.
And goodbye.
Bye-bye.
We're doing this, guys. We're
That was a good one.
That was a good one.
You didn't pause.
Where's Ethan?
Oh my god, open the door!
The other door!
Benji, open the door!
I want you to choose your words very carefully. Where is Ethan Hunt?
You got a wife. You got a girlfriend. I'm going to find her. I'm going to hurt her. And then I'm going to tickle you right in front of her.
I miss Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Is that it? Is that what you got?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. Yeah.